Welcome, lucky listeners. Grab yourselves a hot cup of... Tuck yourself down deep into the covers and make sure the lights are on. It's time for Read Me a Nightmare.
Welcome to episode 30 of Read Me a Nightmare. I'm Angelique Fons, your host, and we have an exclusive presentation for you today. And this one is full of trigger warnings, so if you like swearing, violence, revenge, irreverence, and humor, this one is for you. E.H. Obi reads the first two chapters of her novella, Killer RV. This fun revenge romp is like Thelma and Louise meets Charles Branson's Death Wish. If you want to read the rest of the story, you can find Killer RV on Amazon. After the reading, Ida and I chat, like Delilah and Peggy, about her book and everything else that comes to our minds.
Killer RV by E.H. Obi. In memory of Beverly Sutphin, a pioneer of style and grace. Chapter 1, The Arrival. It was a lazy Sunday when Delilah's life changed forever. She swept up the lunch dishes from the coffee table. Her husband Elijah leaned sideways to peer around her large, round ass at the TV. She stomped into the kitchen and tossed their dishes in the sink. She could hear the immersive video game pinging behind her. Some cowboy shit that her husband had sold his soul to. Before that was some multi-chapter wispy manga shit that somehow had aquatic soccer. Thank God he at least had a job. There were some tight years when his work was intermittent and the full load of their bills fell on her. He had retreated into video games to the point she threatened to divorce him. Now that he was working full-time, he felt safe to ignore her. Delilah twisted her curly red hair into a knot, then started washing the dishes and staring out the side window over the sink. She thought, "This is my fucking life. This is my boring housewife life. I thought it was going to be different. I was going to be different, but here I am at a fucking sink washing fucking dishes for an ungrateful farting lump of a human. Yay me." She was looking at the empty house next door. Her scrubbing slowed when she saw a ramshackle RV pull into the driveway. A tall, willowy woman with sallow white skin and a shaved head hopped down from the driver's side. She had a furry little terrier rat dog tucked under one arm and a duffel bag slung over her shoulder. She was an older woman, deep in her 50s. She slammed the car door and marched inside the house. Delilah put the dishes in the dry rack and wiped down the counters. She was trying to think of a reason to go next door to investigate. She didn't have any baked goods to share. It was too late in the day for coffee. She'd already drank all the wine yesterday, so she couldn't bring a bottle over. She couldn't just scurry over like a cockroach. She'd be too embarrassed to make a good impression. Ugh, she thought, what have I become? People used to call me shameless. I miss that. Disgusted with herself, she went to take a bath, smoke a joint, and watch reality TV until she fell asleep in bed. Elijah crawled in beside her around 9 p.m., and they slept curled around each other like puppies. At 5 a.m. the next morning, Delilah sent him to work with a kiss on the cheek and a still carafe of milky tea. At 7 a.m., the ruckus started next door. Finally, a reason to investigate. Delilah made two cups of coffee and walked over to the open door of the RV. "Excuse me. Hello. May I come in?" She stepped through the door. Inside the RV, the woman was using a power saw to cut a rough square through the floor beside bunk beds in the back. The brown rat dog lay on a yellow Formica table watching her every move. It turned to look at Delilah and yawn widely before turning back to its owner. The woman stood up, set the power saw on the bed, and pushed her safety glasses up to her forehead. "I don't think I'm using the right tool for this." She glanced over at Delilah. "What the fuck do you want?" Delilah held out a cup. The woman shrugged and took a sip. "This is good coffee. Thanks." Delilah turned to the dog. "And who is this furry baby?" Peggy was staring at the semi-hole in the floor. "I call him Asshole. I named him after my first husband." Delilah looked nonplussed, then used her baby voice at it.
Well, hello, asshole. Who's a sweet asshole? Who's a pretty asshole?
She reached out to pet the dog. Asshole growled low and bared its teeth. She drew her hand back and switched subjects. Don't you think it's a bit early for this much noise? The woman froze, then lowered her cup. Is there a problem?
Not with me. I'm just saying, most people around here wait until after 8 a.m. to make noise. You know, mow their lawn, hammer things, use power tools, etc. I think there might be a city ordinance or something. I'm Delilah.
Delilah held out her hand to shake. The woman ignored the gesture. I'm Peggy, and I'm busy. You know your way out.
Thanks.
Peggy gave the last word a bit of sparkle and let it raise an octave, so Delilah would know she was being mocked. Peggy grabbed a hammer and started beating the square in the floor, trying to knock it through. Delilah was dying to tell Peggy that there is no way she had cut enough away to knock through that much wood. She didn't, though. She knew when she was dismissed. She left Peggy wailing on that impossible piece of floor. She noticed that Peggy kept the coffee. Delilah skipped across the driveway back to her house. She felt something she hadn't felt in a long time. Excited. It was later in the afternoon when all the noise next door had simmered down that Peggy crossed the driveway and knocked on Delilah's door. Delilah opened the door and Peggy took in the large, round, white woman in front of her who was 275 pounds if she was an ounce. Delilah was wearing a brightly colored caftan with a matching turban and holding a microfiber duster. Peggy held out the clean coffee cup. Here, thanks for the coffee this morning.
Are you wearing a fucking turban, you lunatic? You look like Mrs. Roper from Three's Company.
Delilah tossed the duster aside, then snatched the cup.
Mrs. Roper was a fucking boss. My hair gets in my eyes when I clean and I look great in a turban. Why not?
Peggy smiled. Why not indeed? Delilah smiled back.
Hey, you want to come in and get high? Pour some tea, so to speak?
I'd rather pour a good red. I got a bottle, if you let me go grab it. They spent the next few hours talking and laughing. Delilah noticed the clock creeping up to 4:30 p.m.
Okay, Pegs, we need to wrap this up. Hubby will be home in a bit, and I need to freshen up a bit.
Peggy set down her wine. Are you fucking kidding me? Did we just time warp to the 50s? Delilah sighed.
I realized what it sounded like as soon as I said it, but he drives an hour and a half to get home. He's grumpy, and he doesn't want to deal with random humans when he walks in the door.
Huh. Awful nice of you to be so accommodating.
Yeah, I'm a saint. To be continued?
Yeah, sure. Just text me before you pop over. I about pissed myself this morning when you popped in, Nosy Nelly.
Cool. Bye.
Delilah ushered Peggy out, then straightened up the patio and washed the dishes. She brushed her teeth to get rid of her red wine mouth, scrubbed off the wine dolly mustache from her face, then reapplied her makeup just in time. Just as she set down her makeup brush, Elijah opened the door to the garage. His dark face was thunderous. Oh my God. The roads are full of bastard idiots. Have you started dinner yet? I'm starving. Fucking Dave. You know Dave from work, the one who tripped over the fern at the holiday party? Yeah, that asshole. You won't believe what he pulled at the meeting.
Delilah leaned over and kissed his cheek. Welcome home, Snuggle Bunny. How was your day?
Fucking terrible. Have you been drinking?
Oh, of course not. Don't police me.
Whatever. Anyway, back to Dave.
Delilah let him drone on behind her as she made dinner. They watched a cooking competition and were in bed by 9 p.m. Delilah sat up in bed around 3 a.m. She thought she could hear music. She wandered into the kitchen and peered next door. The lights in the upper bedroom were on and somebody's shadow flickering on the ceiling and walls. Delilah turned off the alarm and went to stand on the frigid front porch. There was mist in the air, and she could hear the faint strains of rockabilly. She stood on the porch listening until her teeth chattered. She made sure all the doors were locked and the alarm was on before returning to bed. Elijah moaned in protest when she pressed her freezing feet on his warm calves. She smirked and followed him no matter where he shifted. He gave up and lay still. She kissed his ear, and he squeezed her boob. They slept. The next morning, Peggy was kneeling beside the jagged half-hole in the floor of her RV when she heard a jangling racket make its way across the driveway. She glanced at her phone. 7:30 a.m. She rolled her eyes. What a rebel. Delilah poked her head through the door. Yoo-hoo! Anybody home? Just come in, damn it. You could come help. Ugh, for fuck's sake. Peggy stomped to the door and elbowed Delilah's wriggling ass to one side. She was truly impressed by the mound of tools Delilah was trying to haul up those cheap aluminum stairs. Holy fuck! Did you leave a credit card at the hardware store? Delilah grunted and swung the leather container on the floor. It was full of power tools and had a full tool belt thrown on top. She puffed a bit. Whew! That is heavy. Peggy glared at her. Don't you have any hobbies to keep you busy? Me and my tools can go home if that's what you want. No, stay. Did you bring any coffee? Delilah pulled a thermos out of the box and waggled it. You feeling Irish? Peggy unscrewed the lid and sniffed. Jameson's? Delilah grinned. I heard you got a hole that needs work. It was a good day. Delilah was great at holding flashlights and handing Peggy tools. Peggy was great at clearly stating what she needed and when. They spent long stretches in a comfortable silence. Peggy was surprised that Delilah didn't chatter the whole day. She did drink steadily. They switched to beers in the afternoon. It was 4:30 p.m. before they knew it. They were sitting in the RV's kitchen drinking the last of the beer when they heard Elijah shouting, "Where's my wife?" He was standing on the front porch shouting at his phone. He looked up to see Peggy and Delilah's face looking out the RV's window like a pair of raccoons. He raised his hands in the air in defeat. Peggy looked at Delilah. "Wow, your husband is black." "What? Yeah, so?" Delilah glanced at her phone. "Shit, I gotta go. He's texted and called." Her master's voice? "Fuck you, he worries." "Still." "Bye. Today was fun." Peggy waited until Delilah was halfway across the driveway before asking, "You coming over tomorrow?" Delilah opened her front door before answering, "Maybe, if my new hobby doesn't arrive in the mail." "Whatever," Peggy shouted, then smiled to herself and went into her house. Yeah, it was a good day. Delilah showed up the next day looking like Rosie the Riveter, with her hair tied up in a bandana. They tore out a few things in the RV, upgraded a few things, replaced the sink, and added a garbage disposal. Peggy turned it on and it rumbled like a jet engine. Delilah laughed with delight. "Holy shit! You could run a squirrel through that!" Peggy smiled. "You never know what's for dinner." "Weird question. Do you know how to weld?" "What? No. Why?" "Damn. No reason." "I got a friend from clay class. She welds." "Clay class, huh? I just bet you love that Parks and Rec catalog. When's your cake decorating class?" Delilah's face fell. She picked up a few tools and tossed them in the container. "I'll, text you her number." Peggy fidgeted. "Hey, I was just busting your balls." Delilah shrugged, still throwing tools in the box with a loud clatter. Peggy grabbed her hand. "Hey, come on. You gotta admit, you're channeling Betty Crocker pretty fucking hard." Delilah snatched her hand back. "I can't help that I'm a pretty girl with a 50s fetish." Peggy laughed. "You're right. You're about the most well-adjusted fat chick I've met. I shouldn't criticize." "No, you shouldn't. You're a fucking cactus of a person, all prickly everywhere." "It's to keep people away. It sure didn't work on you. You're unstoppable. It's surprising. Look, I..." Peggy's voice trailed off. She looked at the ceiling, sighed, then folded up and collapsed on the floor in one smooth motion. She jittered and shifted in complete silence. Delilah grabbed a towel and placed it under Peggy's head. She crouched beside her and laid a warm hand on the convulsing woman's arm. Peggy stilled, then came to with a snort. Delilah handed her a paper towel. You got some drool on your chin. Are you okay? Can I get you anything?" "Don't fucking look at me like that," Peggy snapped.
Like what? That fucking mother hen, are you all right? Getting off on someone else's weakness, tragedy, whore, bullshit. I swear, chicks get high off of it. Martyr masturbation material. Fucking assholes. Jesus. I just asked if you were okay. Should I have peed on you while you were out? Taking your wallet? Because I can if that helps, you withered fucking toad. Damn, I like it when you're sassy. No, it's cool. I tell you what you can do. Don't call them and let them take me away. Don't let anybody call them. Who? The goddamn ambulance. They get you on that stupid gurney, boom, that's $1,000 in their pocket. Nobody has a cure for fucking epilepsy. They want to intubate everything. Do you know how easy it is to get infections from shit like that? Delilah sat back on her heels. Ew, you got it. Is there anything else I should do? Watch my purse and put something under my head. Delilah nodded. Okay. Why do you need a welder? This RV looks like she is ready to go after a good wash. Peggy rubbed her forehead. There are some modifications I need to do before I'm ready. Ooh, ready for what? The trip of a lifetime. Delilah grabbed Peggy's hands and giggled in excitement. Peggy rolled her eyes and snatched her hands back. That evening, Delilah ran her hands through Elijah's curly black hair. She loved his dark skin against hers. She loved seeing his large hand like a brown starfish on her milky white thigh. They had been married 20 years. At first, it was his diligent working ways and his guitar playing that pulled her in. He was a house painter. He spent his days in mansions doing world-class work. He was a master craftsman in a classic way. He would come home and noodle on the guitar, playing classic rock and blues. What he could do with a glass slide made her knees weak. He was angry, political, and smart. Delilah was surprised to learn that the construction world was chock-a-block full of self-taught intellectuals. They listened to talk shows and podcasts all day. They were conversant on lost art, histories, and whatever random subject tickled their fancies. Quite the bizarre, engaging crowd if one but listened. Her husband reigned above them all. He would have a staring contest with the sun. He was so contrarian. Delilah had to admit she had a difficult personality fetish. She loved learning what made people tick. Difficult people were a puzzle solver's dream. They provided the sweetest fruit. Delilah was not just a connoisseur of grumpy bastards. She was a lover of food, art, music, philosophy, and nihilism. A little bit of chaos is good for the system. And her husband was chaos and conventional in a tightly wound package. And thank God he was into big-assed white women with red hair. He said he loved redheads because they put him in his place when he was getting stroppy. Delilah was a natural blonde that dyed her hair red because she felt the blonde was false advertising. They had sex rarely because of his medications, but when they did, he clutched her to him like a man clutching a life raft. She loved being needed by him. Her desire had worn thin. She didn't feel noticed or understood. She was plagued by the shallow connotations of this. If she was truly whole, then why give a fuck who understands or notices anything? Benjamin Disraeli once said, "Never apologize, never explain." But he had a dick, and that makes things easier. The next morning, Elijah gave her an extra-long kiss before he and his carafe of tea left for work. Delilah skipped across the driveway and hammered on Peggy's door. Peggy answered wearing gray flannel pajamas. When she saw Delilah's smiling face, she whined, "What?" Delilah held up a bottle of champagne. "Brunch?" Chapter 2, Brunch. "So, the RV is gone. What's up?" Delilah poured the champagne and drizzled just a little orange juice in their glasses. Peggy grunted, I shouldn't drink with my medication." Delilah looked mortified. "I'm so sorry. I didn't even think." Peggy laughed. "I'm fucking with you, geez. Your friend said she'd be done in 2 weeks, which is perfect. I only rented the house next door for a few months just to get ready." "What made you plan this epic road trip?" Delilah asked. Peggy answered, "I'm dying." Delilah laughed. "Seriously, fuck you. I'm not falling for it." Peggy replied, "I'm proud of you for not being a guilt whore, but I'm really dying."
Delilah gasped. What? No, I was just getting to like you.
Peggy put down her glass and laughed so hard it degraded into a coughing fit.
Fuck me. You are a classic. Sorry to disappoint you. This vintage human will be retired from this version of reality in T-minus 6 to 8 months and counting.
Delilah sat back and stared. Peggy patted her hand.
Don't look so sad. I'm not sad.
How do you know?
I've been fighting this shit for years. The big C. It's metastasized and I'm over the Western medicine style of treatment. They fried my uterus last time. I'm over it.
Delilah was embarrassed by the tears that welled in her eyes. She rubbed them away angrily.
So where are you going?
Wherever there are rapists, pedophiles, and serial killers.
Delilah laughed.
So everywhere?
Peggy looked grim.
Well, I'm thinking Oregon to start.
Oh, I've heard it's nice out there.
Highest sex offender count per capita in the country.
Delilah did a spit take.
That's your reason to go? Why?
Peggy patted her hand.
Look, I'm trying to give you plausible deniability. I should go. You've been great.
Delilah smacked her hand on the table.
Oh, fuck you. Don't patronize me with these hints you're dropping like anvils. We are friends. Get over yourself and tell me what you are up to.
It's my bucket list. It's important to me.
Delilah was waving her hand in a circle.
Land the plane, Pegs. What's your bucket list have to do with creeps?
Well, I don't have a lot of time and money. So I'm combining a few things. I have a couple places I want to see, and...
She took a deep breath, and the rest came out in a rush.
I want to take out utter bastards that have slipped through the cracks or got bullshit sentences. The kitty diddlers, the rapists, the shit of humanity.
And by take out, you mean...
Kill them. With extreme prejudice.
Delilah sat back. She refilled her glass and stared at her life-size Buddha statue in the corner of her yard. Peggy watched her friend's face, looking for any clue what she was thinking. Delilah drained her glass, walked in the house. She returned with an open bottle of red wine and two plastic red cups. She filled both cups to the rim and handed one to Peggy. They both took deep swigs. Delilah sighed.
I don't want to sound like a dick, but Pegs, I don't think you have it in you. It's one thing to say you want to kill someone. It's a whole nother thing to actually do it, especially if it gets messy. I don't think you realize what it would really take.
Peg snorted. If you read some of the things I have, you'd have no problem killing them.
Delilah shook her head.
You're not listening to me. I grew up on a farm. I've killed animals and helped restrain animals having horrible, nasty things done to them. I've taken a hoof to the tit, and I can tell you that shit hurt. These are violent men used to hurting people. They won't flinch. You will.
Peggy smiled.
Well, look at you with the untapped skills. You've killed things. You can teach me.
What you're not getting is I don't want to. It's literally brutal. Even a fucking chicken will give you PTSD if you don't do it right.
Voice of experience.
Oh, I hated that fucking farm. My parents still live out there.
I cannot picture you in a pair of Delilah Dukes.
Ha! I can rock a pair of shorts. I have a great ass.
You are the one out of your goddamn mind if you think you can kill a full-grown man. How are you even going to find your victims? Not victims. None of these fucks are victims.
Bubba, we are all victims. It's human nature. I'm going to prove to you you can't do it. When you get your RV back, we're going hunting.
Hunting? You all in already?
Not even. This is a dry run. Now drink up. Let's hop in the pool.
Elijah found Delilah passed out on the couch when he got home. She was still in her bikini with a red wine mustache. He sighed and smacked her foot on the way by. She stretched and sat up.
Hey, baby, how was work?
Fine. Did you get anything done today or did you spend the day drunk in the pool?
Both. House is clean, dinner's ready to start, and there's a load that should be done drying. And what the fuck else should I be doing in the pool? Have sex in it? You won't fuck outside or in daylight. Your issue's not mine.
Are you fucking somebody in that pool? Never mind. I don't want to do this. I'm tired, and the drive home sucked. I resent working so goddamn hard to come home to a lush passed out on my couch.
First of all, Delilah started. Elijah put up his hand to block her words. She pushed it away. Don't you shush me. You poked the bear. I didn't. I work plenty hard. Part time. I make good money. If I'm not at the studio, I'm taking in your dry cleaning, picking up your prescriptions, washing your clothes, cleaning the house, washing the stupid goddamn dishes, planning dinner, shopping for everything to construct this Shangri-La you breeze in and out of every day. I work plenty. I graduated cum laude, and I'm still just somebody's fucking housewife.
And we leave you on that mic drop moment. Of course you need to know what happens next in the adventures of Delilah and Peggy. My guess is they're about to hit the road. Speaking of, so I was sitting here with Ida today, and she has written the funnest romp of a novel called Killer RV.
Thank you.
And you would have just read us a little bit of this book, so maybe tell us more.
Well, I decided to read the formation of the plan, you know, and plus also, you said it was kind of a YA audience. So I tried to pick something that was a little less lurid.
Very good.
You know, like this with as few trigger warnings as possible. They're basically sitting out by the pool and Peggy lays out her master plan of what the book's going to be about, you know, which is a road trip from Baltimore to Oregon. Baltimore, Maryland to Portland, Oregon. They're using the sex offender registry to pick targets out.
Awesome. I won't do any spoilers, but I love how the book ends. So this is a very satisfying read.
I'm so glad. I've had conflicted replies on how it should, you know, no spoilers, but yeah, I had some conflicted people about how I, you know, wrap things up. So,
but you're optimistically and realistically, actually, sort of, you know.
Oh, good, good. I haven't been picked up for murder, so I really had to just trust on my crime show watching to kind of figure that out. You know, my friends are cops, so
really good writing,
yeah.
Speaking of realistic, you know what I found very realistic? Your dialogue. I thought that you nailed how people probably talk when they're not being filtered. I thought that you did a great job doing that.
Thank you. Some of my friends who bought it were like, it's like I'm there with you. And I'm like, I have never kidnapped a Catholic priest, FYI.
That you'll admit to.
You know, I'm like, oh dear, really? Do I talk like that all the time? But yeah, it is pretty much, you know, how me and my friends talk to each other. You know, just very, you know, because I think as women, we edit ourselves for our children and our loved ones because we have been kind of raised to usher them into what we see as their best path because we love them and we care about them and we listen to them. At least, I guess, if you love the people around you, you do. And you just try to lay these little breadcrumbs of, have you thought about this? You know, and of course, it veers into what people consider nagging and all this other stuff. But, you know, if you're walking off a cliff, don't be upset if I'm like, hey, idiot, turn around, you know.
As a mother of a 14-year-old? Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah, you got to do that nice little bit of peacekeeping, World Health Organization negotiation with other humans. And so they don't really get our locker room talk. It's our girlfriends that get our locker room talk of, I know exactly what I'm perpetrating in life. And I know exactly how I am stepping on my own tit and not saying how I really feel kind of thing.
Stepping on my own tit. Now there's an expression I'm going to start using.
You know what I'm talking about? Where you're like, oh girl, pause.
100%.
Yeah.
100%, because we still want to be seen as nice, don't we? Oh, we're such nice people. I know. Trust me, I fight with this every day because, you know, I bend over backwards wanting people to like me and be nice. And then I'm like, why?
But, I do like being nice. You know, when that whole thing about smiling is us kowtowing to the patriarchy. you know, of like, smile, you know, you should smile more, all that. And everybody's like, screw you, I don't have to smile. I can have a neutral face. And I'm like, I kind of like to smile. Like, there are times when I'd be out walking my dog and it would be a personal challenge to smile at people and see how long it would take for them to smile back.
Well, you're in Toronto, they never smile back. In Toronto, they keep looking
back. I tried, you know, but it's like, got you. I hope I turned your day around a little, you know. Someone smiled at you without any kind of give me a dollar or any kind of I'm here to sell you something, you know. It's just, hey, how you doing, human? You know, and just trying to foment positivity in our general area. I think that's
valid.
That's something I think more people should kind of think about in this world. But it kind of becomes this weaponized niceness that takes away from you.
Niceness. Another one. I'm going to start taking notes. We've got stepping on my own tit and weaponized niceness. Let's keep this going.
One of my girlfriends said that it was a deft feminist novella about how women conform to society. And I was all, well, thank you. Oh my God.
That's exactly what you were going for, Ida. Exactly.
No, this was just a personal fantasy fulfillment thing of like, what would be your perfect vacation? Well, I would love to go visit a lot of Americana and get all the pressed pennies and send all the postcard to my friends and just occasionally whack a few rapists and pedophiles along the way.
That sounds like a perfect vacation to me too.
Doesn't it? I feel like it contributed to the health of the world worldwide. And, you know, because those kind of criminals are collectors. They're volume criminals. My journalism friends and I did an investigative journalism piece in college in like, oh, I'd say 06. And I am a massage therapist, so I talked to a lot of different people. And I knew a bunch of people who worked in Homeland Security because they are super stressed out. And it turned out that the port of Long Beach, where I live in California, has at times huge influxes of child pornography and human trafficking.
Oh, no.
And so there are in the FBI building in LA, there's an entire floor of agents who work on finding these people and prosecuting them. And then you have the independent, vigilante groups that will go online and pose as children and use their childhood photos to record these people soliciting children. And then they dox them. They find out where their jobs are there. And then they post it online and dox them. And it caused problems with prosecution because it was considered entrapment. So there was like dimensions of this. Well, you guys don't really prosecute them enough. So we need to use social justice to destroy their lives.
Right.
Like, because proving it is so hard, then why not just do basically a leaflet campaign online and destroy their lives socially?
Right.
So, yeah. You know, one or the other kind of thing. You know, when you lose faith in the justice system which I find... I think most of us that have dealt with the justice system in one way or another have kind of lost faith in that it is made for us.
Wow. I'm going to segue because I have a question. My question is there a sequel coming? Dun, dun, dun.
I haven't even considered it, truthfully.
I think that you should. I think that there should be Killer RV Part 2. I'm looking for another trip. I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I think that...
Delilah might get bored again.
That's, you never know. And we
you
all
know. Like, as a recent widow, I can always do something that Elijah is gone and no longer has the leash on her.
Good. And if you aren't going to continue Killer RV, what is in the future for Ida? What are
Well, I have the entire year mapped out for Last Girls Club. And I'm excited about that. I'm not even through halfway through the month. And I set my submission level at like 50 and I'm at 49 and it's just now the 16th. And I'm like, should I expand it more or should I just keep it at 50? Oh my gosh. Like so many people got excited about that theme.
Active shooter, the active shooter theme or the one before?
Oh, no, this one is this year's. And this year's spring is theme is panic.
Panic, right?
And a lot of people got behind panic.
And I almost sent you something in two. I was like, oh, and then I ended up sending it someplace else. But panic, well, is a great one.
There's one more left if you want to double submit. One more space left. I've got that. I have two different books that I would like to work on this year. One is the third in the series of my children's series, which is Vermin Chronicles.
Oh, I love those. I bought, read, and reviewed for you. They were so
thank you so much. Well, Suicide Rats is going to be the third one. And lovely. Because, you know, that they're in a formal battle now with the squirrels and rats of London, there's going to be extremist groups that spring up. That and what the basis of this book is and why it's taking me a moment, because I care so much about the subject, which is being groomed for political or religious ideals, mm-hmm. and committing violence because of them, and how that it takes everything that is wonderful about you and your belief in what you would hope to be a better world and uses it against you. And then all you will ever be remembered for is that one act of violence. So don't let someone else's worldview groom you and truncate your life for something that just basically wastes your life. Oh. You know, and I think children need to know that. I mean, as much as everybody talks about grooming kids, they don't really give them the tools or the, I'm sorry, I'm looking up in the left side of my head like I have a script in there somewhere. They don't really give children the tools to recognize being groomed.
Right.
Because it interferes with being trained to be a citizen, to being trained to be a consumer, to being trained to be a parishioner. Like, if we really taught people to think about why they think the way they do, not to just simply accept what they're being told, it's a lot difficult to control an informed citizenry.
This is true. Wow.
Right? So they're going for the easy answer as opposed to the informed one. And that's why, as a society, and I feel most societies, we've lost the ability to comprehend nuance and look at problems from like base systemic issues, as opposed to it's a problem because of these people, or it's a problem because of this belief or this gender debate or this. They want a black and white answer. They want a scapegoat. They want something that's easy to fix. And life isn't like that, man. Life isn't like that at all. It's systems, it's history, it's all kinds of things, you know? And so because that's such a big subject and I've got to chunk it down to, I'd say, an eighth or fifth grade level of reading, that's hard for me. But Suicide Rats is on the table. I definitely want to finish that. I'm also working on Widowed, Two Stars Would Not Recommend. I've journaled this past year taking writing classes about what this year's been like. Of basically, my life has been etch-a-sketched in the past year. Like, you know, I lost my husband. I had to put my cat down.
Oh, no.
My salon that I worked at is closing, and now I have to find a new place to work, which is fine. These are all things that I'm working with and dealing with. But yeah, it's just the universe cleared the playing field. So it's just all options now. And I have to find my way through that and go for something.
Those are three hard things.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I don't know if I'm going to keep my house. Truthfully. I mean, right now my parents are helping me out, but at the end of the day, my parents are old. I might have to sell my house and move back to Texas. You know, I mean, just there's a ton of different things. But the thing is I was telling a girlfriend of mine when she was over here and we were hanging out, I was like, the funny thing is I feel like the universe gave me the big one up front. You're widowed after 20 years. You're done. Right. And then just hit me with like five other things in the subsequent months. And it kind of felt like I was so numb from the first event. The other events coming at me weren't as stressful because I'm like, you know, okay. And I'm like, and if we had stretched that out over a couple of years, how stressed would have I been trying to figure out how to fix this? And right now I am in a master class of acceptance. Like whatever comes my way, I'm like, okay. You know, like I don't have any, I can't make plans for the future right now. I'm struggling with that as far as like projecting things that I'm going to do, because I can't imagine past next week or next month. It's like, am I okay today? Then we're good. You know?
Well, that's a true way that we should probably all be looking at life. Here's something that I find interesting is that you have an outlet for expression and coping through horror.
Definitely. Right? Definitely. Like, and I love the horror, not only just the horror genre, the horror community. Like, you will never find a more caring, funny, interesting community like this group. They're really encouraging when you're doing projects and stuff like that. And I think we share trauma. Like, friendship is built on trauma most of the time, shared trauma, you know?
Okay, friendship based on shared trauma.
You know, that's the hardcore ones, the true ones, right? Like you got a bunch of acquaintances, but the ones that have been in the shit with you when you're knee deep and you don't have a way out, and they're the friends that sat down with you and had a beer and said, wow, that's a lot. You know what I mean? They didn't try to fix it. They just listened to you. That's friendship is shared trauma. And I feel like horror is shared trauma. It is the collective unconscious. It's all of us. What is keeping us up at night, you know? And every generation has their thing. And I've noticed there's been kind of a slide to a wilderness aspect of being lost. Like a lot of, like, I just read Beneath the Unspoiled Wilderness by Nicholas Robinson, found it on TikTok, which, by the way, if you love horror, TikTok's a great place to find horror as far as like independent publishing. A lot of, look on book talk, hashtag book talk, hashtag horror. A lot of independent authors are putting their stuff out there. And it's more kind of, it's less slasher crazy dude and more like Eldritch Call of Cthulhu kind of crazy thing in the woods. So I think as a collective, our fear of the unknown and society breaking down is one of the overarching things of horror right now.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well,
often what we write about does show the collective unconsciousness or consciousness of what we're trying to cope with. I mean, I think that's, if you look at our movies, even if you look at how remakes are done and how they evolve, it's very interesting to see. You can see the flavors of society through the horror that we produce. Because I've always wondered, because as I said, I like to be a nice person. I like brightness and sunshine. But why am I so attracted to horror?
Right, because we would like to lay waste to our enemies and hear the lamentations of their family. But that's not how you get along with the neighbors.
Right? Funny and true. Maybe true. And then it's, right? I'm not nasty to the next, I love my next door neighbors, but I'm not nasty to them. But then I'll write something really, really dark on a piece of paper and feel great.
Yeah. You're getting it out. You're venting. And I think that's important. I think the repression of venting is, you can't do that, man. You got to get it out. But also, just like a lot of people watch true crime and listen to that. Mm-hmm. I think a big part of that is our little monkey mind is using other people's experiences to evaluate a way of escape. Like we explore worst case scenarios.
Always.
To accept it or to learn how to escape it. You know, we're the vanguard. We're the ones at the edge of the forest looking for the monsters. Like, I think part of our kindness and part of our niceness and lovingness is deeply rooted into not wanting just our own survival, but the survival of our loved ones. Did you ever see BBC's Jekyll?
No.
It was, oh.
I will put it down on my list, though.
It is so good. And there's this one part where the scientist who was working with this guy who was Jekyll said, you know, because they were talking about him being a murderer and a psycho and blah, 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 blah. And she's talking to, I think, his wife. And she said, when did you realize you had the capacity to kill someone? When did you realize that you would go to the ends of the earth and really just lose your mind on someone? And she was like, it was the moment I held my first child.
Oh, good answer.
Because
good answer. That
violence comes from a place of fierce love.
It is true. Absolutely. You would murder for your child. You would.
When did you realize you could commit violence? And I was like, wow. Even though I'm childless. Wow, that's awesome. You realized you could commit violence when you loved someone deeply enough to abandon your humanity.
I mean, look at The Walking Dead, right? Which, by the way, I'm watching season 11. It's amazing. I love The Walking
Dead. You're back in. I don't know. I bailed on Negan. The bullying stuff. Oh, yeah, that.
But he turns good. And then you love Negan, which is sort of. Part of the brilliance of that show that they can take somebody so despicable and find the humanity in them.
I'll have to rewatch because, like I said, I was like, I
lost it with
after
you.
Glenn went, I'm like, I'm out, can't, no.
No.
It just
keeps getting good. Of course, there's those little lulls, right? There's 11 seasons, but in general, I find the show just keeps delivering.
Yeah. That's why the comic books were just amazing. If you go look in the bookstore, those comic books are those big hardbound ones about that thick, you know, and there's multiples of them. He did a great job designing that universe.
Wow.
You know,
I'm trying to learn how to do, you know, world building. You know, it's interesting. The path of writing, Ida, is like, I look at, you know, cause I started in 2018, right? And then I'm looking at the learning path of how to create worlds, develop characters, write dialogue. All these things are huge skills and they don't come naturally. It doesn't matter how talented you are. There's nothing really magic to it. Writing is just hard work. And these are all skills that you have to master and learn, much like going through school, grade one, grade two, grade three, grade four, right? Like,
well, and you also have to resist getting lost in academia. And keep taking classes and things and all that and hiding in world building and things like that. Like you have to commit. One of my favorite bits of writing advice is be brave enough to let the imperfect exist.
It's so true.
You know, I mean,
I'm so proud of you.
Right now.
You've got a novella out there. You've got your series. I cannot get past the short story. I can't. I get imposter syndrome. I stop what I'm working on. I throw up my hands and say, I'm exactly what you just said. I need to learn more. I do not know enough to attempt a project of this size. And then I back up to my comfort zone, which is short stories, and write another 45 of those, which could have been a book.
Well, that's an anthology. You know what I mean? You've got an anthology. And short stories are wonderful. They're great. Like, everybody doesn't have the same attention span. And it does take talent to do a short form beginning, middle, and end and have that punch. I want you to care about the characters. I want the dialogue to be good. And I want at the ending for you to sit back and go, oh, I can't believe she did that. You know what I mean? Like, that's talent. That is, you know, it's a different skill set. Are you a member of the Horror Writers Association?
I am not.
Well, I finally bit the bullet and jumped in. And right now I'm taking, is it a 10-week course on horror writing? Which, oh my God, we did our introduction in the class and they were talking about what kind of genre you work in. And I was like, I finally kind of, because I thought Last Girls Club was feminist horror. And then I got such a spectrum of people and the flavor of it. I'm like, oh my God, we're horror with heart. We like go at it with a social justice vision. It's heartwarming horror, you know?
Heartwarming horror. Okay.
Yeah. And the teacher goes, yeah, I call that Pixar horror. Like, that was a chest punch. Oh my God. Pixar horror?
No, you're not.
I was like, you know what? First 10 minutes of Up, everybody cries. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, oh, they'll get you in the feels. So I'll take Pixar horror.
You are not Pixar horror. Trust me. Trust me.
You know, if they need to make me seem cute and cuddly to handle me, I'm fine.
That's all right. That's a deception. See,
right?
You can use that guise to your
advantage for sure.
Yeah. No. So what I have done, how I've been growing is through, I joined a couple of writers groups. And they have, man, I'm leveling up quick. I belong to the Wolf Pack now, which is run by Wolf Moon. Oh my God. It's been like amazing because their standards are very high. It's led by Wolf Moon and he gives writing classes and seminars and I've taken a bunch of them. And it's sort of like, ba-bing, ba-bing, ba-bing. It's like, here's another mind-blowing thing that I should have realized that's so simple, but I didn't know it before. You know, things like Heart's Desire in a story.
Right.
The magic sword and all those things were in my writing before. I just didn't realize I was doing them. Even writing techniques, how to really get to the heart of your story. And the best part has been the other writers in the group. And then we trade stories and criticize each other, but it's all done nicely. Wolf says, here's a compliment sandwich. You start with something nice, sort of offer some, you know, suggestions and then sort of end with something nice, which then you don't go away feeling like your heart's been torn out of you. But it's been amazing just having people other than my mother to read my story. It's been
so I have to say, if your mom's anything like my mom, mom doesn't pull punches.
Oh no, my mom is aggressive and she will tell me exactly what's wrong. But my mom she doesn't compliment sandwich. She just tells me how it is.
Well, the thing with constructive criticism, it's fixable issues.
Yes, this is true.
You know what I mean? It's I wanted to learn more about so-and-so. I didn't feel like you gave me enough of this for me to understand what was going on. It's a totally different level of critiquing. And then to have other authors, man, they don't want to shred you because they want the same informed view on their work, you know, and that's phenomenal.
You know, what's been really tough is me learning how to give criticism, because usually the first few stories I wrote, these Wolf Packers, I'm like, I love this. Your writing's really beautiful. And it's true. I did love it. And the writing was beautiful, but I would be too shy to point out what I thought didn't work. Right. Whereas, you know, now I feel confident enough to go, look, you know, you drove to the story. It took me a while before I figured out what was going on. You know, you have too many characters. I can't keep track. So now I say these things and it's better. And I think that they appreciate it more as well. Right. They don't want me to blow rainbow and sunshines up their butts. They want their stories to improve much like I do. Right.
Mm-hmm. You're here to help me, not compliment me.
That's exactly right? And then I'm another one too called the Dreamcasters, and they keep bringing in phenomenal guests. You should probably join one of these too.
Dreamcasters?
Dreamcasters, I freaking love them. They do hopeful fiction, which is hilarious because I'm firmly, as you know, a horror writer, but they've accepted me even with my horrific tendencies. And the guests have been like Bruce McAllister and Mary Robinette Cowell and just like
wow.
Heavy hitters that say things that I watch the meetings with my jaw on a table going, oh my God, oh my God.
I'm going to look that up. See, we're already like doing the writers meeting stuff and sharing things. This is awesome. I love it.
If you want to learn more about Ida Obi and her works, you can visit her website at www.lastgirlsclub.com. Thank you for hanging in to the very end. And if you liked what you heard today, please take the time to leave us a review. It really does help other people find the podcast. Until next time, sleep with your eyes open.